Hey everybody, welcome to episode 10 of the 13 o'clock podcast. Today, we're talking about Nazis.
Yeah, everybody loves the Nazis.
Fucking Nazis, man. Specifically, we're talking about the occult beliefs, the possible occult beliefs of the Nazis and how it kind of influenced their ideology, allegedly.
Yeah, it's a huge subject and we're not really sure how we can cover it. We don't think we can cover all of it in one episode. So we'll probably just start at the beginning of the whole thing. Maybe we'll cover a couple different subjects. And if you guys like this subject, we can revisit it later.
Yeah, because, you said, this is an enormous topic. Enormous.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we speak, I have like 50 Wikipedia pages open, like, and notes and stuff. So, you know, obviously it's just going to be as quick. So otherwise we'd be here all night long. But basically, what we kind of wanted to start with, they think that it kind of started the whole Aryan superiority mythology, let's say, if you want to put it that way, might have started with a book written by Madame Blavatsky, who was a Russian aristocrat. She wrote this. It was fictional, but it was like written like a pseudo history or a pseudo mythology.
Yeah.
And she posited a kind of a race of super beings that came from Atlantis kind of thing.
Okay. So we're going to start on this topic.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is we're going to start with what we know is true, right?
Yeah.
And then later certain things were maybe happened in this subject, you know. Like I think a lot of this subject actually came after the 1960s, after the Nazis were already gone.
Because I should say that a lot of the kind of like Nazis were occultists kind of stuff, that in popular culture didn't really come about until about 1960 when a book called The Morning of the Magicians came out. And that kind of posited a lot of the stuff that...
Yeah.
Now we're not saying, I mean, Hitler, don't think he was so into the occult. I think he kind of liked to use the mythology because he knew it had influence on people. However, Himmler and Hess
might be
kind of into that shit.
Right. Hitler understood the power of theater. He loved the opera. He loved symbolism. He liked that kind of
stuff. Yeah, and he understood how
it could spiritually influence people.
Exactly. So do I think Hitler believed any of that stuff? No.
He just believed in its power to... inspire, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of where I'm at also.
It was to raise a morale.
Yeah.
You know, raise the morale of his country.
I think
it was a lot of it.
So basically, Blavatsky puts this book out, and it's a huge influence on, and at this time, in Europe as well as in the United States, kind of end of the 19th century, early 20th century, a big revival in spiritualism.
Yeah, it was across the board, including Germany.
Right. Particularly because, I mean, I think that was kind of the beginning of a lot of traditionalist religion kind of trying to break down because The Origin of Species came out and more, you know, science was getting more play. And I think people were kind of not abandoning traditional religion, but looking for other options.
And this goes throughout history.
Yeah.
Religions don't last long. You're lucky to have a religion last 2,000 years.
Yeah.
Most of them don't.
Right.
They come into fashion, they fall out of fashion, they're replaced by a new one. And this was kind of like the decline of Christianity as a like government type organizations because, you know, the age of theocracy is now gone basically in Europe. So they're kind of replacing Christianity with folk beliefs and supernatural.
And in some ways going back to quote unquote, you know, golden age
type,
kind of mythology of, you know, gods and supermen and things like that in a particularly nationalistic framework.
Well, in terms of the Germans.
In
terms of the Germans, yeah.
So what ended up happening, this thing that Blavatsky wrote about Atlantis and super beings and stuff like that was, it influenced a philosophy or an idealistic system called theosophy, as well as one called Ariosophy. And it's kind of like, I mean, her ideas were picked up by a couple other authors. Von Liszt was one of them. And were kind of Germanized and were kind of tied in with German pagan beliefs.
Right. So the,
you know, going back to Norse mythology and things of that
nature. So the initial concept of Aryan Superman and Aryans was not even German. It was a Russian concept, really.
More or less. I mean, I think she was drawing on, mythology.
Right.
From all over, really.
Not to say the Russians weren't Germanic. A lot of the Russians were Germanic, so that makes sense.
But that seems like where that concept first kind of took root in the idea that later kind of came out in the Nazi ideology.
Right.
Of kind of going back to a racially superior super being type of idea.
In general, they believed kind of like that humans aren't evolving, but they're devolving. That the ancients used to be giants, and they were, you know,
exactly.
They were better than normal people of today, and they were trying to reestablish and go back to the way they were.
Right.
Which is, you know, that even kind of follows some of the stuff out of the Old Testament Genesis of Nephilim and
giants and Superman. It's a similar. There's a lot of parallels.
Superhumans and
They're kind of feeling like, oh, the longer we go on, we're getting, you know, race mixing, and it was causing a mongrelization of these. Like I said, going back to the golden age,
and in the Old Testament, they're portraying like, you know, the early the early characters out of the Bible as living to be 800 years old and 400 years old,
right?
And, you know, the patriarchs, you know, is what they were
and
called.
Still fathering children,
and still fathering
age.
Children. Oh yeah,
without like, when they didn't even need Viagra
and hot looking 90-year-old women that all the kings want to mess with.
Man, I'm going to be a hot 90-year-old woman. You just wait.
90-year-olds. Okay. So it was just the Germanic versions of that.
Right. And that's kind of where the idea came from. And there is some evidence to suggest that Hitler was kind of into these ideas. I mean, these ideas were kind of, you know, in the air at the time.
At least when he was young.
At least when he was very young.
Right.
Even before he was in World War I.
Right. And that would have been probably stereotypical for everyone in Germany in that generation at that time.
Yeah.
Kind of like people today kind of know Star Wars lore and the Superman lore and things like that. So.
And then it seemed like after Germany lost the First World War, it seemed like culturally there was almost kind of this sort of shame and this kind of wanting to reestablish their power. And, you know, so I think I can see where all those kind of occult threads sort of came together. It's like, we need to go back to the old days when we were, you know.
And no one can really deny that Germany wasn't royally screwed over after World War One.
Yeah.
They were mistreated. No defeated country would be treated that way in a modern age, really.
Right.
The way that Germany was treated.
But
so I can see why they were mad.
Yeah. They were mad. Yeah. So basically we kinda wanted to cover we're kinda talking about the Thule or Thule Society. I've heard it pronounced both ways.
Let's just call it Thule. I think most people call it Thule.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I've heard it pronounced the other way too. I don't even know if that's correct. But, and the Vril Society.
Yeah, this is where it gets fun.
Now, I should note that there is really no evidence that these two societies ever existed.
Yeah.
Some writers have put forth that these societies were kind of occult societies, almost like a Freemasonry kind of thing, I want to say.
I would say it was kind of like a mixture of
A secret society.
Yeah, like the Freemasons and mixed with spiritualism.
Yeah.
Like fortune telling and, card reading and things like that.
Yeah.
But their own versions of it. They were using rune magic. Vril maidens.
Which Von List was a big rune advocate. Right. That's probably where that came from.
Now, I don't think the Vril Society existed.
No.
I thought that maybe the Thule Society existed. Is there concrete evidence for it?
Not real sure about that. It seems like no, but then some writers say yeah.
Because the Germans, modern Germans totally disavow this. They say that these societies did not exist.
Yeah.
That they were invented later, afterwards. By a certain former SS member who wasn't high ranking, that he made this up, or at least started these concepts about old societies.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem to be. No one seems to agree. on this.
Yeah, it was kind of, it seems like most scholarship says that there was an actual Thule Society, and it was formed right after World War One.
Okay.
And its aim was, you know, to return Germany to, you know, a golden age of civilization after their loss in World War One. And they named it Thule or Thule after a mythical country from Greek legend.
It was an island, actually.
An island, yeah.
It was basically an alternate story for Atlantis.
Atlantis, yeah. Atlantis. There's a lot of Atlantis kind of stuff going on in here, too. Right. And apparently the organization known as the Thule Society, the Thule Society, was kind of the nascent German Workers' Party, and they think that Hitler may have attended one of the meetings and whatnot.
That it eventually evolved into the SA,
right?
Which were the Nazi stormtroopers, which right. was kind of like a private army, that private unarmed army,
yeah,
that supported the Nazi Party, although, helped to get them into power.
I have to say that. The historian Nicholas Goodrich Clark, who wrote that book, The Occult History of the Nazis, or whatever it was called. Yeah, I want to say. But, yeah, he wrote kind of the definitive book on that in 1985. And he says, yes, there probably was a Thule Society, and maybe Hess was a member. But that he doesn't, there's no evidence that Hitler ever was at any of their meetings.
Right.
But, basically, we wanted to talk about that a little bit, and also about Vril.
Yeah, Vril's fun. That's when you get into the sci-fi version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's kind of talk about that a little bit, because like I said...
One thing about the Thule Society, though, yeah. is their imagery did include a swastika.
Yeah.
Now, swastikas were used throughout the ages by many different cultures. Even the Koreans used it.
Yeah.
And there's... In general, it's equivalent to the yin yang sign.
Yeah,
it's like,
well, it's the four winds.
Four winds. Another description I heard is that the Nazi or Hitler's interpretation of it evidently was that it was like the yin yang sign, but it represented the axis upon which the world turned.
Right,
and of course, and the Axis powers were named after that.
Yeah,
so the world turns on change. And change is always like the cycle of creation and destruction. To create something, you must destroy it. To create a house, you must cut down trees. That kind of thing. So that made a sense to me. It was a black axis upon which the world turns. They're yeah. calling themselves the Axis.
Yeah.
That they're going to change the world.
Yeah.
Along with, you know, Italy and Japan.
Right.
And that it was on a white disc to symbolize purity and... that was on a red background, which represented the blood of the martyrs that died in the line of defending and promoting German National Socialism.
Right.
Okay. Now, German National Socialism is the German interpretation, really, of Marxism, actually. And the Russians were the International Socialists. The Germans were the National Socialists, were in a way a different interpretation of basically the same thing, in a way. But that's another subject, and that's a very big subject. Maybe we can cover that.
Yeah, like I said.
The Russians had the hammer and sickle. Evidently, Hitler believed that was a very powerful symbol. It was a great marketing tool. And he decided that swastika was equally impressive to look at. So they chose that one.
Right.
Now, whether or not they got that from the Thule Society or the Thule Society, we don't know.
Yeah.
Evidently, the Thule Society used a round swastika.
Yeah.
So, possibly.
Yeah. Okay. And we also want to cover a little bit, like I said, on Vril or the Vril Society. Yeah. Now, there's no evidence that the Vril Society ever existed.
No, I don't think the Vril Society.
But the idea of Vril
actually
came from a novel. It was written in 1871. It was initially published as The Coming Race, but later reprinted as Vril, The Power of the Coming Race. And it was written by Edward Bulwer Lytton, who was actually a very, very popular writer at the time. He's probably best known nowadays because he coined popular phrases, the pen is mightier than the sword. And there's also a yearly novel writing competition. Well, a shitty novel writing competition that's named after him just because he's the first one to use the cliched phrase, it was a dark and stormy night. But he wrote this book called Vril, The Power of the Coming Race. And it's kind of like what happens. It's kind of a sci-fi sort of novel. And they basically, these people, they go, it's Hollow Earth. It's based on the Hollow Earth mythology.
Some guys go to a mine, they fall down into a shaft,
yeah.
One of them gets killed, the survivor meets a race of super beings that live down there, they've been down there for a long time, they escaped the flood.
Right.
And they had the power of Vril.
The people were called the Vrilya.
Yeah. Right. Now Vril was an energy that they could channel through themselves.
Yeah.
To create or destroy. They could heal or destroy. They could even transmit information. In other words, like telepathy, using it. And it kind of sounds like the Force or psychic powers.
Yeah, it's similar to the Force. Now, in the book, I believe they called it like a fluid or some kind of...
There's a reason for this.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason was that the author, in his own words, was actually describing electricity.
Right.
He thought He's writing in 1871, and they knew about electricity, but they didn't know what was possible with electricity. So he imagined that electricity could give you psychic powers. And
I wish.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Now, later on, this seems to have evolved into another concept called of a substance called orgone, you know, which is something that flowed through the ether, and some people could channel it and cause orgone to create objects, to make energy and matter. And it all came from basically a misunderstanding of electricity.
Yeah.
Now, that's kind of funny. I guess when you don't know much about electricity, electricity would seem to be paranormal.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it did at first.
Right.
I mean, because it's not something that...
It's not real obvious.
Yeah, it's not an obvious thing. It's invisible. Thing. Yeah.
And they thought it was a fluid because electricity flows in a current.
Right.
So it goes from one place to the next. So it must be a liquid, a fluid in the ether, an invisible fluid. That's why Vril is being described as a liquid.
Yeah.
Kind of strange. But then later on, they start describing anything that gives you sustenance as Vril.
Yeah.
Like Vril beef, you know, and Vril elixirs.
Well, incidentally, from the UK and you get that stuff, I think, yeah. what the hell is it? It's like, I think it's beef bouillon or maybe not.
Yeah.
Is it? Or like a drink mix?
I know,
but I can't remember what it is, but it's called Bovril. And actually the Vril at the end of that is actually.
Yeah. Sustenance.
Yeah.
Electricity.
It actually comes from that.
It's electric cow.
Electric cat. It might be a drink mix like Quick. I can't actually remember at the moment. I don't feel like looking it up.
Okay.
You guys know what I'm talking about. But so there were rumors that there was a Vril society that was kind of based on these ideas. And related to this idea, I mean, and there are pictures online like that show these women that were supposedly in the Vril society, and they all had super, super, super long hair.
Yeah, and they were like psychics.
Yeah.
They didn't cut their hair. It went down almost to the floor.
And I read that this long hair was supposedly so aliens could communicate with them.
Yeah,
Vril
maidens could
like
talk
a,
to
like them. Like an antenna type of thing?
They were psychics.
Yeah.
You know, mediums. And evidently they could talk to aliens and tell you what the aliens were doing. Now, nobody knows if this group really exists.
Right.
Or existed. It probably didn't.
And weren't there also rumors that the Third Reich actually made, that they actually went to Antarctica looking for a hole in the earth, like, because they thought that there was something in there?
I think it's a legend. I don't think they actually did that.
Although I have to mention right here that we saw the raddest horror movie about this very concept.
Yes.
Nazis at the center of the earth.
If you have not seen
Nazis see it right now.
At the centers of the earth.
It is so awesome.
It will explain everything.
But if you see Nazis at the center of the earth, that's, I mean, that was actually like some rumor circulating about, about that.
Yeah. Vril, the coming race, actually was the inspiration for Nazis at the center of the earth. But you got to see the movie. It's absolutely hilarious. It's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is really good. Highly recommended.
There's even a Vril flying saucer in it.
There is.
But we can't spoil it. Got to keep moving.
Yeah, I was gonna say two words, but I'm like, no, I'm not gonna say it.
One of the best movies of all time.
It is. It's awesome. Let me take a break right now because we're 20 minutes because I have to do three breaks this time. Sorry about that, everybody. But so we're gonna take a break right now.
More sponsors.
Yeah, more sponsors, and then we will come back and continue our fascinating discussion. I would like to take a second and thank Subculture Corsets and Clothing for sponsoring Project iRadio and my show. While listening to my podcast, please take a second and visit their website at www.subculturecorsets.com. They carry a wide selection of corsets, rockabilly, gothic, steampunk, and pinup clothing, shoes, and accessories. Again, their website is subculturecorsets.com, or if you're in the Jacksonville, Florida area, stop by their store in the Avenues Mall. And if you like to save money, use the discount code 13O'Clock when checking out and save 10% off your entire order. By the way, if you're a curvy girl, Subculture did not forget about you. They carry size 4 to 4X, and guys, they have men's clothing and shoes as well. So go shop at subculturecorsets.com now and use the discount code 13O'Clock for a 10% discount. Okay. So.
We were talking about Vril Maidens.
Yes, we were talking about Vril Maidens.
I don't think Vril Maidens existed.
No. Like I said, I think the possible reality of the Vril Society came from this book, The Morning of the Magicians, from 1960, which was kind of, it was like an overview of all kind of, you know, magical and occultist kind of stuff. But, you know, they're talking about giants ruling the earth and Nazca lines and blah, blah, blah. You know, a lot of conspiracy theory type stuff about the Nazis. And so I think that's where that idea came from. Yeah, I don't know.
The German historians say there was no Vril Society. Matter of fact, they removed the Wikipedia page for that.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't allow that one. They say that, no, that did not happen. And that these photographs of these pretty Vril maidens with the long hair or random pictures of
just girls women with long hair.
Hair from the time put together. And then people have photoshopped up or probably just doctored old photos to make it look like there was something mysterious had happened in Germany.
Right. And, there was even a woman, Maria Orsic.
I don't believe she existed.
Right, who was supposed to be the head of it. She was supposed to be a medium and all this other stuff.
Some of you will believe that was a real person and the photos they show of her, you know, it's a beautiful woman. But for all we know, that's just a model.
Yeah, that could be anybody.
That could be anybody. And, there's a lot of legends around her, but she doesn't seem to exist.
No. I mean, like I said, I've seen the photos of the same photo you have. It's pretty much just one photo.
It's a good idea. Showing. Whoever made up that legend.
It is,
did a good job. It's a good idea.
Yeah. But,
I don't think it didn't happen, though, I don't think.
No, probably not. Probably not. We also kind of wanted to talk about, Himmler a little bit because.
Yeah, you got to talk about Himmler.
He seems kind of like almost like the engineer of a lot of the kind of occult stuff surrounding the Nazis. He seemed like a true believer. Hitler, I don't think was.
No, but if there was a Nazi occult, he would be the one.
Yeah.
He'd be the one you go to. You know, and he was leader of the SS.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting possession of Wevelsburg Castle and made it the main training center for SS officers. And it did have some cool stuff that they built down in the basement, a room that had a black sun in the bottom.
Yeah, that was the general's hall had the black sun symbol.
And there were pedestals where they were going to put statues to fallen Nazi heroes.
Based on Camelot or like King Camelot. Arthur.
Kind of like that.
Round table type of thing.
And the signet rings of fallen SS soldiers were going to be stored there. It was a cool idea.
It's like a Sith temple.
A Sith temple. But, you know, that's really not that unusual. Militaries do that. They do that kind of stuff today. They're ritualistic. When I was in the Army, we did things that were kind of like that.
Yeah.
You had unit traditions and soldierly type traditions that involve ceremony and pomp. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Because it helps morale. It boosts morale.
Yeah.
It gives you kind of a spiritual union with the unit and the mission. So it's not very unusual what they were doing. I'm sure the Citadel and military colleges in the United States have similar stuff. I mean, universities have it with Skull and Bones.
Yeah, society, sure.
Societies and things like that. So it was just like, it's that.
Now, didn't Himmler, I mean, when he established the, you know, the castle at Babelsberg, didn't he want to make it, you know, not just an SS training area, but also kind of a school where he would teach them about Germanic history, or pseudo history, I should say.
Because it was like a mythological history. I'm sure there was going to be all kinds of little indoctrination, you know, courses. And it was evidently set on what he considered to be ley lines. And
Because he did want that because it was supernaturally significant.
Right. Well, the SS were kind of like, they were kind of like the warrior priest class of the German armed forces. You know, they had the death's head, which would, you know, symbolize their power of life and death over enemies, and I guess Germans, you know, domestic enemies foreign and domestic, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was just a cool castle. I mean, wouldn't you want a castle?
Yeah, it is pretty rad.
Yeah. They were going to have a school there. But I don't really see it as too unusual. Spooky. Yeah. It was only spooky because it was the German National Socialists.
It was Nazis,
The SS. It was Nazis, and they had those suits. Those black Hugo Boss designed uniforms. You know, they were sharp dressers.
You know.
Everything was PR.
Right.
They had good PR.
And I have to say that, you know, even though the Nazis were giant shitlords, they looked fantastic.
And it was no accident.
Yeah.
Dr. Joseph Goebbels, Mr. Propaganda, and his boys all got together and they said, how do we project, you know, an image of strength and power? And then that's what they came up with. They hired the best designers and graphic designers and clothing designers, and everything looked cool. Yeah. And it was kind of a way of compensating, you know. It built morale.
Yeah.
It made them look and feel official. And it would, they got respect from their enemies by looking that way.
Yeah, looking, you know, sharp.
Looking sharp.
Every girl crazy about a sharp dress, man.
I guess so. Well, they had to compete against the Russians.
Right.
Because the Russians were, you know, they had numerical superiority. The Russians had a lot of good weaponry, big armies, you know. So they had to project an image of power. You know, they were in a hard situation because the Soviet Union was nothing to laugh at. Stalin wasn't a nice guy, even though they had it. They started off with a non-aggression pact, but now I'm getting into history.
Yeah, that's okay. Getting back to the occult thing.
Let's keep the show fun.
I think that, honestly, I think the reason why Nazism and occultism is such a fascinating topic and why so many people are interested in it, one, because, you know, occult, secret societies, everybody loves that shit. I love that shit. Even if it didn't exist, it's still fun, like entertaining to read about. Also, though, I think that some people, because, you know, some later writers, pseudo-historians, let's call them, you know, came up with stuff like, you know, Hitler was possessed by a demon.
Oh, God.
Or, you know, he went to psychics and astrologers who gave him a mandrake root and told him that meant that he was going to rule the world or whatever. But honestly, I think that people, and, you know, particularly starting in 1960, you know, when all of the Hitler occult kind of mythology started, I think that people had such a hard time, you know, thinking about how Hitler and the Third Reich could have done what they did. So it's almost like they don't want to believe just regular people could have gone along with this shit. So they want to believe, like, Hitler and the Third Reich were like magic somehow, like they had cast some kind of magic spell on people to get them to do these horrible things, or you know turn their head away while horrible things were going on. So it's kind of that thing where I think people hang on to supernaturalism when they're uncomfortable with the lack of control they have about reality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think there might be an aspect of that, like why people want to believe all these weird occult conspiracy theories about the Nazis.
Yeah, but really when you analyze it, the only thing that was unusual about the Nazis was the fact that they of the Holocaust. Holocaust, and this is not a third world country that did it.
Right.
This was a Western country that was highly developed. That's the only thing that was unusual.
Right.
Things like this happen in other countries all the time.
Yeah.
Just not on that scale, not using industrial technology.
Yeah.
Not with guys that were highly...
Well, because that was kind of the first time that people in the West had seen that.
Right.
And I think they had a hard time dealing with it.
Well, also you have to remember, here's a good analogy. Do you remember what it was like back in the 80s and the 70s? How different the thinking was?
Yeah.
It's changed totally.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Germany in the 40s wasn't like the rest of the West in the 40s, evidently. Evidently, Germany in the 40s and the 30s kind of resembled, their thinking was very kind of late 1800s.
Yeah.
They believed in tradition. They believed in the old-fashioned ways. So the Third Reich wasn't really, even though it was futuristic, the Third Reich wasn't really happening in the 1940s on a psychological level. It was actually happening in a futuristic version of the late 1800s.
That's actually a very insightful way of putting
it. That's what it was. That's how they thought.
So because their whole shtick, even though they were like looking toward the future, mm-hmm. they were actually looking toward the future in the sense of going back to a past. Like I was saying before, and that's very common in reactionary movements, wanting to go back to some rose-tinted past that never actually existed. And in their case, they kind of made it into a whole mythology.
Yeah. Well, imagine that a good way to look at the German National Socialists is imagine you got some guys in the late 1800s imagining a high-tech world.
Right.
That's what the German National Socialism in the 1940s, 1930s was.
Yeah.
It was a fantasy world.
Yeah.
Their mentality was the mentality of the late 1800s, but their technology was mid-1900s, 1940s.
Yeah.
So in one way they were retro, and another way they were futuristic. They were back to the future.
Damn. We have to measure back.
So they were just a weird mixture of futuristic and retro. They were retro futuristic.
Like steampunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. It's the future, but it's the past at the same, time. It's blowing your mind. Blowing your mind.
Well, they have jets, but then they're thinking about, you know, like knightly orders and blood, and
it's such a weird juxtaposition when you think about it.
Yeah, Germanic blood and holy causes, and the whole thing is kind of has elements of holy crusade to what they're doing.
Well, like I said, and that's why, there were so many rumors swirling around that, you know, the Nazis sent expeditions to find the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
The Spear of Destiny, which they actually...
They got that.
Well, you know, they got, what is it called? The Habsburg Spear.
Yeah.
Then they get to steal it from a museum in Austria.
Yeah, you can tell that story.
Yeah.
Well, they just went around basically grabbing anything of historical importance.
That wasn't nailed down.
But that's not that unusual either.
Right.
All armies do that. When they go into a certain area, they'll go to the museums and they'll clear them out. They have to.
Yeah.
Or the looters will get that stuff, or it'll be bombed or burned down during firebombings and stuff. Right. So,
although some of it they haven't found.
Well, they hid it.
Yeah.
They'll eventually find it.
Although, I should recommend the book, The Monuments Men. I didn't see the movie because I heard it sucked. But the book is really awesome. That was kind of about the Allied... group that it was their job after the war to go and try and find all the artwork that the Nazis stole. Very good book.
Although, one thing that's funny about all the missing artwork, we're getting away from the subject,
that's okay.
Hermann Göring. Yeah. Hermann Göring had his palace, and he'd dress up in a toga, evidently, and have all these great European artworks all around him. He'd get drunk in there.
And would he lay in there and pretend just like have someone like feed him grapes and shit?
Yeah, like he was a Roman emperor. It was funny.
Oh, dear God.
At least that's the legend.
And also I wanted to mention this too. Didn't Himmler think that he was the reincarnation of some ancient king?
King Heinrich.
Right.
He believed in reincarnation, and that's how he was rationalizing how he got to his position. Because he went from chicken farmer to leader of, commander of the SS.
Right.
So, well, I must have been a king in a prior life, a Germanic king.
Yeah,
King Heinrich.
That's it.
Which is like saying you're King Arthur.
You know? And actually, there were kind of a lot of parallels between the King Arthur story and the in the whole Nazi mythology, too. The Aryan mythology.
Although, you know, it must be said that Patton believed he was reincarnated. I think he, if I remember correctly, it was either some kind of Greek soldier that fought with Alexander. But don't quote me on that. That's just off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah, he believed in, George Patton believed in reincarnation.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, it was beliefs of the time.
Okay.
Some people still believe that today.
Well,
that kind of stuff. So that's all right.
Yeah. Well, actually, we did a show about it. Mm-hmm. Or about those twin girls that
were. Possibility. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I doubt it, but who knows?
Just gotta wait and see.
All right.
We'll find out later.
What I'm gonna do, I'm gonna take another break right now. And then when we come back, since we were just talking about, their technology and stuff like that, let's kind of get into some of the Nazi UFO stuff.
All right.
Because this is your favorite.
Yeah, this is a good one. I like this stuff.
You like this kind of talk.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to take our second break right now, and then we'll be right back.
Buttercup of Doom on Project iRadio. I am your host, Kelly Owen. I'm just a girl who writes horror and thriller fiction, talks to bugs, jumps in puddles, and now hosts a weekly podcast full of opinions, advice, and a touch of gypsy wisdom, whether it's current affairs or social media nightmares. Join me, the Buttercup of Doom, Mondays on Project iRadio.
All right, Nazis and aliens.
Okay, Nazis and aliens.
Where do you want to go with this?
Nazis didn't have anything to do with aliens.
Well, no, I know, but...
But during that time, all the armies were looking at flying discs, but maybe not in the way that people would think. The U.S. was working on something called the Flying Flapjack, which was a... disc-shaped aircraft that had propellers out on the outside of the disc, and it was nearly vertical landing and takeoff. And they built several of those, and the last version of it was actually a combat prototype, had guns on it and everything. But they wanted that to use on aircraft carriers, because you could put a lot of them up there on a flight deck, and you didn't need a real long runway.
You didn't need a lot of room, yeah.
For the thing to land and take off. But they scrapped it, because the jet age... came, and it got to be where they could land a jet on an aircraft carrier.
Well, plus now weren't we watching videos of that flying flapjack thing, and it just never really...
Oh, the flying flapjack worked.
Did it?
Yeah, okay. It worked.
But Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
They scrapped it. You can look. It's called the Voigt Flying Flapjack. We can show them a photograph of it on YouTube. Now, the Germans were also working with vertical landing and takeoff because their runways were getting bombed. One of the weirdest ones that they were working on was called the Triflugel. The Triflugel was like an aircraft that was shaped like a cigar, and its fins had fins like a rocket, and it stood up just like a rocket. But in the central section, it had big blades like a helicopter, and at the end of each blade was a ramjet, and it would cause the rotor assembly to spin, and it could take off straight up, and then it could level out and fly forward in even flight. Kind of like a helicopter, a rocket-powered helicopter. They were working on that, but of course, you couldn't land something like that, especially with 1940s technology. And that didn't go anywhere. But then they were also working on a disc-shaped aircraft. Now, they were rumored to make these things called Vril saucers and flying saucers. But there's no surviving actual evidence. There could be some drawings... But I'm not sure those have been totally verified as authentic drawings of a Vril flying saucer.
Yeah, I'm not really sure if they actually believed that they're, because there were rumors that they were employing alien technology or were building things with this Vril power or were experimenting with time travel.
Why would the aliens be interested in the Nazis?
Maybe the aliens are Nazis too. We don't know anything about the aliens.
If aliens were wanted to deal with a terrestrial power, they would have dealt with the United States.
you think?
Because we had the industrial infrastructure and the wealth.
Because we're the best, obviously.
Yeah. No. We had a bigger industrial infrastructure to make that kind of technology than the Germans did. They'd be talking to us.
Yeah.
You know? Well, and Russia had all the manpower.
Everybody likes to think they're special and they're the ones the aliens would talk to.
No.
Probably. I think if there's really aliens, they don't give a shit about us.
Now, there was rumored to be a disc-shaped aerial gunnery target that they were working on. But very little is known about that. And it kind of did look like a flying saucer. But the way it was described was kind of like a half of a sphere with a ring around it. And in that ring was a bunch of little blades. And you could fly it up in the air on a remote control and you could shoot at it. Now, I don't know if it's true. How the story goes is that where they were working on that thing, the Russians were advancing and everyone on that project destroyed the little prototypes that they had, including disc-shaped aircraft. But, you know, the collapse of the Third Reich is like something out of Mad Max. There aren't even accurate records about what happened and where things went, and just people vanished and equipment vanished. Things were just destroyed. It was an apocalypse. Now, another weird one was Victor Schauberger. And he was working on something called a repulsine. And a repulsine was a motor based upon vortex energy.
Oh.
All right. Now, we know about jets, where you use a electric engine to start a bunch of turbine with a bunch of blades on it. And you combust fuel inside that turbine assembly, which causes it to spin. And when it spins, it sucks more air through the front where it's mixed with fuel, and then the combustion happens, it blows out the back. Jet power. We know about jet power. But that's not what a repulsine was. There were two different versions of a repulsine that were rumored to exist. One of the ones that I remember was cigar-shaped. And you could put it inside the fuselage of an aircraft. And you used an electric motor to spin this spiral-looking blade assembly thing. And when it spun, it caused a vortex to happen similar to a tornado. And once it got up to a certain speed, it would power itself in a way that a tornado powers itself.
And that
was called a repulsine. Another one was one that was kind of like a flying saucer shaped. It would suck air in through the top, blow it out through the bottom. And once you got it running, I don't understand how it worked. The descriptions of how these things work.
If it did indeed work.
The descriptions sound wacky. But evidently it was made by, you know, Victor Schauberg, who was like the German version of a mad scientist, basically. Although, you know, he did do some real work, so nobody knows.
That's what I mean.
Nobody knows.
What do you know about the Nazi bell?
The Nazi bell was supposed to be this metal bell-shaped object that was kept underground at a certain type of a research facility, and it would glow blue, and it would hover, and it poisoned everybody that worked on it, and evidently the Russians got their hands on it at the end of the war.
But no one's actually seen it.
I think that story came from Poland. If I remember correctly, there was a Polish writer who was the first person to mention this. I believe it was Poland. Don't hold me to that. That's off the top of my head. The audience can research that themselves. I don't believe there was a Nazi bell. Sorry. I don't.
Well, what was it supposed to be powered by?
Oh, man. There are so many stories about that Nazi bell, about what it did, that it could bend space-time and allow you to see in the future.
Damn.
That it was a propulsion unit, that it could, you know, that it could power a real flying saucer, that kind of stuff. But based on the descriptions and the conflicting accounts, that I don't believe that existed.
No.
Now, they said it was filled, and one account said that it was filled with mercury that would spin around inside of it, and it would glow blue. The only thing that kind of sounds a little bit like that mercury and glowing blue might be an ion engine. And, you know, we use ion drives on spacecraft.
Yeah.
You know, like satellites. They don't move fast. You know, so it's not like something that, and they would put out a lot of ions. I'm sure it wouldn't be good for your health to be around an ion engine if it was running inside the Earth's atmosphere. Now, the Germans were interested in exotic propulsion. If a Nazi Bell existed, if it did, which I don't believe it did, but let's say a Nazi Bell type thing existed that caused these rumors, may have been an ion engine, which could have made sense because they were working with jets too. And maybe that was a natural progression. Hey, let's just throw a bunch of ions out the back and we'll get some thrust. But I think rapidly the Germans would have discovered that there's almost no thrust out of an ion engine.
They'd be like, well, back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
Or however you say that in German.
To get a plane to fly with an ion engine, I think would be next to impossible. Hmm. But the Germans weren't real rational, you know? They kind of had an anti-rationalist streak in them.
I actually meant to mention that they were actually, as much as they're kind of known for doing these wacky, not wacky, but these horrible science experiments and things with the, you know, human subjects and all the stuff they were trying to build.
Yeah.
They were almost anti-science, really. Even though they wanted to be technologically powerful.
Well, remember, they were Back to the Future, like I said.
Right.
Imagine guys in the 1800s dreaming up science fiction machines. They were kind of like that, but they had the science to do it.
Yeah. But they didn't know quite enough.
One of Wernher von Braun's friends, I forgot his name. It's just coming off the top of my head. Maybe we can put a link to him or something. One of his friends wrote an article in a magazine, and it was, if I remember correctly, called... Man, what was it? Lack of reason in Nazi land.
Yeah.
Or scientific.
It was something like that. I just saw that in my skimming through Wikipedia.
Even German scientists believed in things that were not rational.
Yeah.
It's just a culture.
Yeah.
Culture, and it was the times. It was, hey, you know, let's try to make a ray gun.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? I mean, you know, a single 9mm round that we use in our submachine guns really only cost 2 cents. But nah, let's make an expensive ray gun. You know, they would do something
because
like
I
that.
Think really that was one of the factors that eventually led to their downfall, because they were spending all this money
on
working on all this weird shit that just was never going to work.
Instead of trying to come up with the next best fighter plane, they'd try to make 10. Of the next best fighter planes, each one of them totally different, and some of them absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, let's make a death ray.
Yeah, 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 they were like that.
Let's build the planet killer base.
Well, they tried to build a space shuttle, basically.
Yeah.
They had a suborbital bomber, called the Sanger Suborbital Bomber. And they were going to launch this thing off a huge rocket rail in France, have it skip across the top of the Earth's atmosphere, and drop a radioactive dirty bomb on New York. They tried to do that.
Yeah.
With 1940s technology. It never would have worked.
No.
They were going to use a bunch of V2 rockets pushing a sled. We'll show them the picture. It was bizarre. They were ambitious, man. Hey, they were reaching for the stars, man. They were anti-rationalist. It's a lot better than building a plane. We're going to build a suborbital
plane.
Bomber.
That's no fun.
Yeah, plane no fun. Yeah.
That's no fun. Okay, so I'm going to take my third break right now, and then we will come back and, I don't know, just discuss a few other little odds and ends. Odds and sods, as they say in Britain. So here's the third break, and we'll be back in just a second.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Full Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Poisons, Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay, so Nazis, occultism.
Anything to it?
What have we established? Like I said, I mentioned Himmler before, how he was kind of the big brains behind this sort of operation. You know, Hitler was not really big into occultism, at least, you know, when he was young, maybe he was. But, you know, later, actually, when they started, you know, killing everyone, occultists were in that group.
Yeah, they'll kill occultists.
And Hitler did publicly denounce occultism, whether because he thought it was harmful or whether because he didn't want...
Maybe he didn't want rumors spread around.
Some rumors spread around about his own beliefs. Who knows? But I actually wanted to mention, and I forgot to mention this before, I wanted to mention Himmler forming the Annenerbe.
Yeah, this did happen.
Yeah. Now this actually
did happen.
And I believe it was under the auspices of the Annenerbe that they did all these kind of archaeological expeditions, yeah. Did they not?
The Annenerbe most likely inspired the story of Indiana Jones.
I was just going to say Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, yeah.
Where they were looking for the Ark of the Covenant.
Looking for the Ark of the Covenant. But the Annenerbe was actually looking for the origins of the Aryan race.
Right.
So they go to Tibet.
Yeah, that was their big thing.
For a strange reason. The reason why they went to Tibet is because Tibet had swastikas on their vases.
So, swastikas here, swastikas there.
So they go there to measure the skulls of all these Tibetans, you know. And then they declared them Aryans. Yes, they're white people.
Even though they're not really.
I guess I don't know all the
details.
Well,
that's what's so funny.
It was a publicity stunt. What does it say? What does it say there? Tell us about the Annenerbe.
Well, basically, it was just. I mean, Annenerbe means inheritance from the ancestors.
Okay.
So, like you said, they were basically trying to bolster this nationalist Germanic mythology. They were trying to establish that they were, quote, you know, the master race, and that, you know, they came from, or they were like a degraded version of a past, you know, superhero type race of people. So basically they were looking for any kind of archaeological or cultural information that would back that up. And but it also kind of took on occult overtones because Himmler was so into that kind of thing. But that was basically all it was about, just kind of trying to establish ancestral supremacy, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I know this is for true, all right. Hitler derided that program.
Yeah.
He thought it was a waste of time. They just used it as a PR stunt. He just thought it was silly.
Yeah.
And there's a film of home movies of Adolf Hitler hanging out with, I think it's Joseph Goebbels is there, a couple of his other high party members, and he mentions this in the home film. Now, the home movie that he mentions, the Annenerbe, doesn't have sound, but they use a lip reading program to add, or, you know, to see what it is.
To figure out what he's saying.
What he's saying. And he made a snide comment about, yeah, that's about as smart as trying to find Aryan ancestry in Tibet, you know, and then he cracked a joke about Himmler. So they were taking the piss out of Himmler a lot. And he also made a joke about, how did it go? And he goes, it was along the lines of eating in front of Hermann Göring was the time I realized that pigs eat pork. Sitting across the dinner table from Göring. Oh yeah, sitting across the dinner table from Göring, that's the day I realized that pigs eat pork. That's just hilarious.
For some reason, it's very amusing to me to think of Nazis sniping at each other like petty little bitches.
Oh, evidently
hilarious.
Evidently they were quite the characters, and that's all they did is just take the piss out of each other constantly.
Nazis are bitches, you guys. Bitches.
Well, the Third Reich wasn't a top-down organization like the Soviet Union was. Hitler had a lot of power, but the way it was structured, the Third Reich was basically a bunch of fiefdoms, competing fiefdoms, each one run by popular party bosses that had come up through the revolution over the years. And each little fiefdom had overlapping responsibilities, and they competed with each other and stole from each other constantly.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. Totally inefficient. There's this idea that there was some kind of a Nazi efficiency.
Like they were frighteningly organized.
Super organized. No, they're very amateurish, a lot of infighting and clicky.
Yeah. Well, like Mean Girls.
Well, these guys all knew each other. You know, they all met each other in a bar.
Yeah.
You know, they'd get in a bar, drink beer, and just, you know, talk about how bad the German Republicans were.
Man, Goring's so, you know, fat.
Beer hall push, guys. Yeah. You know? People blow it into something that it wasn't.
Himmler's so flaky.
These are guys that just were hanging out in a bar. We're going to take over. And they did.
Which is so funny because in bars all over the world, there's probably dudes getting drunk and saying that all the
we're
time.
We're going to take over.
Yeah, we're going to take over the world. Yeah, that's right. God damn it.
We need to be running this. Well, they were combat veterans and, you know, they ended up getting support. And they actually went down there with clubs and fists and beat up communists.
Yeah.
And the cops liked them. They let them do it. And then the cops started to join them. Then the next thing you know, the SA and the Nazi Party was bigger than the German army.
Yeah, it just kind of
so
snowballed.
They became the army, and then they took over, and then they started getting rid of things like elections. They just declaring emergencies. So, you know, he did it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
It didn't have anything to do with Hitler selling his soul to the devil and the occult and him rising to power. He got into power the same way all those other guys got into power, from the bottom. They just fight their way to the top.
Although I also wanted, like, before we wrap up, I also wanted to talk very briefly about kind of Nazi, the human experimentation, and their desire to perhaps create a super soldier.
Oh, yeah. Well, that wasn't just them. The Soviets were trying to do that, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, most people know. Now, like I said, whenever you talk
about
the Nazis.
We did that.
Yeah.
We just made meth.
Yeah.
They called them pet pills back then.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, they give them to pilots. They still give them to pilots today.
Yeah. Well, they gave them all kind of illegal drugs back then. And they didn't, like, it wasn't a secret either. Mm-mm. Well, it wasn't illegal at the time, was it?
No. It still isn't.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, with Nazism, there's always this, you know, there's such a mystique about them still that, you know, the line between reality and fantasy is kind of blurred. So, I mean, obviously
they live on in video games.
Yeah, like Wolfenstein and stuff. But, you know, obviously they did do human experimentation with a lot of the prisoners.
Yeah.
And they did do weird shit like let's poison sets of twins and see which one of them dies first and that kind of shit. And then, you know, there's other rumors that, you know, they tried to, was it them that tried to impregnate women with different animals and stuff, or was that
Soviets.
The Soviets I was thinking about? Yeah. Okay. So like I said, there's, you know.
On a side note, there was a Soviet program to crossbreed humans with chimpanzees to make a soldier out of that. But it got abandoned quickly.
Is it bad that I kind of wish I knew how that turned out?
I'm
curious.
It didn't work.
I mean, we're so genetically similar.
They wanted to make like a sub-race of human beings
that were slavish, really strong, because chimpanzees are really strong.
And that you could, you know, unleash them on the enemy. It was somebody's wacky idea, and Stalin said, okay, try that out. But evidently he killed the program pretty quickly once they realized that was a waste of time.
Although that's kind of the thing.
How could you control them?
And kind of getting back to the Nazis, too, it's kind of like they want to do all this scientific advancement, but it's almost like they only knew enough science to come up with dumb shit that wasn't going to work. You know what I mean? Because it's like, they kind of understood evolution, but not really. Because it's like some of the experiments they were doing and shit like that shows that they really didn't understand it would work at all. And the thing with the chimps and human women, they're like, let's breed chimps and humans together because it will make a super strong person that's still kind of smart, but also kind of animalistic.
And they were disposable.
Right. Yeah. You have no idea
what would happen.
Yeah. The genetics is too complicated.
Right. Well, they were going to try it.
I mean, you know, which is why eugenics doesn't really work either, because, like I said, the genetic DNA is too complicated to know how shit's going to come out.
Right.
It's like you might get some good shit happening and then all this negative shit over here.
They wanted to see if they could make a human Z.
But, you know, so needless to say, the Nazis never did create a super soldier. They probably weren't talking to the aliens.
Well, their super soldier was the Waffen-SS.
Yeah.
And they'd send him to the Eastern Front, and they'd give him meth.
Yeah.
And you could fight for days on meth.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's documented. I mean, didn't matter. They had a high casualty rate and a low probability on them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, give them meth. They'll fight for 4 days straight. But they couldn't supply him. Most of those guys just froze to death.
Yeah.
On the Eastern Front.
Yeah.
But that's another topic.
Yeah. But anyway, let's see. What is our time looking like here? Oh my goodness. Okay, we're almost at an hour.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, like I said, we've just scratched the surface.
Yeah, there's so much.
An enormous, enormous topic. You know, if you want to look anything, look up the Thule Society, look up Vril, Ariosophy, the Anunnaki, Nazi UFOs. There's information all over the place. So we just kind of did a rambling discussion.
Yeah, if you guys want us to look into anything else on this subject, just drop a comment.
We can do a part two. Because I feel like there was so much that we didn't cover.
Yeah, researching for the show, you're just like, oh man. It's like reading the library. There's so much of this stuff.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it's like this was actually Tom had been wanting to do this topic for a while. And I was like, he's pretty up on his World War II.
Yeah, I love World War II.
Yeah, he's really into that. And I don't know, like, I know, you know, what most people know about it, but I didn't know a lot about the Nazi and occult thing other than, like, a couple dumb documentaries I saw on History Channel that were probably bullshit. So I had to do, like, a lot of research for this. So if I fucked something up, I'm sorry, but I'm just like, I'm sitting here, like, looking at, like, 50 different pages to make sure I'm getting stuff right. So, anyways. So I guess we're gonna wrap it up. All right. All right. So if you like the show, then make sure to either download us on iProject Radio or watch our YouTube show and subscribe to our YouTube channel and, you know, give us a like, whatever. And also you can check us out on our Facebook page and our Twitter, which is 13 O'Clock Podcast. And that'll probably do it.
And we got to wait. And Walking Dead's on tonight. We got to see who is getting killed.
Yes, we're recording this on Sunday.
That's right.
It's just 4 hours from now.
4 hours from now. Who is it? Who's getting beaten to death by Lucille?
Oh, shit.
We don't know. We haven't seen it yet. I'm saying it's Glenn. Glenn's dodged a bullet too many times. It's got to be Glenn.
I think it's going to be Abraham and then Glenn. And then Rick is going to get his hand cut off.
We'll see. I say Glenn.
$5. No, he's not going to bet on it. Or it might be Maggie.
No.
That's a wild card.
No.
All right. All right.
Glenn. He's dodged the bullet too many times. Glenn must die.
And on that note, thanks for listening to 13 O'Clock, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.